You know, there are a lot of mystery fans out there, and I count myself as one of those fans. I really enjoy mysteries, and especially it's appealing to me when they are set in Wisconsin. Larry Mueller here, and my next guest has written a number of books that are mysteries that are set in Wisconsin. She could probably calls them. I know I call them the Chloe Ellefson mysteries. And she's back with us today. And that must mean that she's got a new Chloe Ellefson mystery out. Well, I know that for sure because I just finished reading it about a week ago. This time, Chloe is in Mineral Point to explore the early mining of lead in Wisconsin. And it's really cool. The book itself is called Mining for Justice. And you can join in the conversation if you've read some of her books. I hope you'll join in and maybe comment on them. Maybe you've already read The Mining for Justice. It's just out, so you might not have had time to finish it. I hope you'll join in the conversation. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org. or post on our Facebook page. We'd certainly love to hear from you. Kathleen Ernst, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
I'm delighted to be here.
Well, it's great to have you with us. And for those who aren't familiar with your books, tell us about the characters you write about.
Well, I created the series, the Chloe Ellefson Historic Sites Mysteries, because I really treasure all of the wonderful historic places in our state. And Chloe Ellefson, the name... main character, is a curator at Old World Wisconsin, where yeah. I used to work. And some of the mysteries are set there, but more often she gets out and about and visits other historic places in Wisconsin and occasionally neighboring states. So I really enjoy celebrating our wonderful past.
And I like the way that you design your books because you are in the present, or the present for for Chloe, but then you take us back.
Yeah.
Chapters kind of, they don't always alternate exactly, but you're kind of going back and forth from the past to the present, which the present is not 2017.
No, it's the early 1980s.
1980s, yeah.
Which is when I was working in the museum world, so I'm writing from memory. I really enjoy adding the historical fiction thread because when you work for the Wisconsin Historical Society, as I did, it's a wonderful job, but it also can be very frustrating at times because you might come across an artifact in your collection that's just marvelous, but you have no idea who made it or owned it or used it or how they felt about it. Or you can be doing research for a new program or a special event, and there's just little details that you just can't pin down. And so in these books, I get to fill in the gaps in the historical records, and that's why I create the historical fiction threads that are braided with Chloe's stories in the 1980s.
Well, Mineral Point, you know, this latest book is set in Mineral Point. What a great setting.
It is, and I've always loved Mineral Point and Pendarvis Historic Site, which is located there. And over the years, a lot of readers have made suggestions about places where they would like to see Chloe go, and Pendarvis and Mineral Point has always been very high on the list.
Is that right?
Yeah, it really is. A lot of people really have good feelings about it. It's a charming town with a very strong preservation ethic, and I think a lot of Wisconsinites and people from other states, too, really enjoy visiting.
Maybe you could talk just a little bit about what it was like back in those old days. I was really intrigued to read the kind of some of the history and all right, it's fiction, but you're writing about events that kind of actually happened in a way. I mean, lead miners were there. And
yes, it's a fascinating period in our history. During territorial days, the government made the land that's now southwestern Wisconsin available for mining. And at that time, lead was being found, and there was a great demand commercially for lead. And the first miners who came were... In a general sense, they were usually American citizens already. They come seasonally. They were looking for the more shallow lead that they could get mm-hmm. out pretty quickly and make some money. And at the same time, Cornish miners in Great Britain were experiencing some job losses and downturns in the economy. And Cornish men have a great reputation as really solid miners. And so they started immigrating. I believe the first arrived around 1830. And they really brought new skills to the mining area. It was very rough and tumble and mining camps dotting the landscape. But they were capable of going very deep, which the first wave of miners had not really been interested in doing.
Yeah, and that's where they actually made some money.
They did. They were very good. They went down. They worked hard. And I was just looking at some of the newspapers last night from the 1837 is the earliest newspaper that we have at that time. And they were talking about how so many of the Cornish men arrived with nothing but an industrious soul and strong hands, and were able to do over a few years sometimes quite well for themselves.
Quite well for themselves. And this whole process about how they lived when they first arrived.
Yeah.
Talk about that a little bit. I'm sure there are people who know about it, but a lot who don't.
Yeah, it's pretty fascinating. The men who came first and were seasonal, they often just scraped a little hole in the ground and pulled a tarp over it or put some boards and brush over it, and they stayed there. And then they went back home. But when the Cornish men started arriving and they were living here year-round, they also at times lived in just the most makeshift shelters or in little caves that they kind of chiseled back into the rock. And can you imagine spending a Wisconsin winter in 1832 living in a cave or in a little shelter that you'd scrape from the soil? It must have been just brutal at times.
It had to have been. And it's really a fascinating part of your book to have that. And you set it at Pendarvis House.
Yes.
First tell us about Pendarvis House.
Pendarvis as a historic site is a very special place, and it is a collection of old buildings dating back, some of them to the 1830s and the first Cornish people that arrived. And today you can visit them. They were purchased during the Great Depression, actually, by two men who had a wonderful preservation ethic, and they just decided, we don't have any money, but we have time, and we'll barter, and we'll scrape up what we need. And thanks to those two men, Edgar Hellam and Robert Neal, several wonderful old 1830s buildings have been saved in Mineral Point at Pendarvis Historic Site.
That reminds me that while it's a work of fiction, there are some real names in there of real people who did some things.
There are. I like to honor real people when I can, and certainly Robert and Edgar deserve a lot of attention. And unfortunately, though, some of the people that I love to write about are not well known. Many of the Cornish arrivals were illiterate, so we don't have any wonderful diaries and letters, you know, explaining daily life. And that was especially true of women. Records of Cornish women who arrived in the 1830s are pretty scanty. So yeah. I just read as much as I could and learned as much as I could about the area, and then imagined the woman that I portray.
And the person that the main character from that time period in your book is a woman who did some amazing things. Was there somebody like her? I've forgotten her name.
Her name is Mary Pascoe.
Mary, I forgot her name. Were there women like her, or was there a woman like her?
Well, one of the first things I discovered when I started, no pun intended, digging into this topic, is that Cornish women in Cornwall frequently worked at mines. They did surface labor. They didn't go underground, although I've read that was more because men thought it was bad luck to have a woman underground. And I was so impressed that women, and often even young children, were doing hard manual labor, sometimes dangerous.
That was hard to almost read about.
It was very difficult to imagine that. But where I went from that was, well, how about if one of these women who started doing mine work when she was 6 years old and then ultimately immigrated to Wisconsin, that would be one strong woman. And it was really fun to imagine her to life. So I don't have any records of Wisconsin women, helping at the mines with surface work here, but it must have happened. They must have helped wash the ore and break things down and things like that.
Yeah. Kathleen Ernst, our guest today, she is the author of the Chloe Ellefson Mysteries. Her latest book is called Mining for Justice. Jill Nadeau joins us as well. Jill, you said, don't lose my page.
That's right.
she's
only got a few more pages left to go.
Jill's a kind of a mystery fan as well, as I am. And so it makes it perfect to have her with us today as we talk about our fall membership drive. Now's the time for you to put a value on this program and everything else you hear on WPR. Make a gift right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Help pay for the programs you depend on. It's pretty simple. And so far, Larry, it looks like we've got 13 more pledges to go, and we've got, only about 4 minutes. So please make your donation now. Support the programs that you enjoy here at WPR. Go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You might think that Wisconsin Public Radio operates largely with tax dollars, and we do get money and funding from the federal government and from the state government. Listener contributions make up the single largest source of our income, frankly.
So your support is vital to keeping Wisconsin Public Radio on the air. Now that you know how important listener support is to NPR, make a pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And if you've never given to Wisconsin Public Radio before because you don't think it would make much of a difference, you can think again. Listener donations, still the single largest piece of our budget. But that really doesn't mean we're asking for an enormous gift. It can be any amount.
That's the magic of it. The gifts from thousands of people combined together, they make up what we have as a budget. So many first-time donors, they'll give maybe $10 or $20 a month for listening to WPR. And if everybody does that, oh my goodness, we'd probably get a raise, Larry. You decide the amount that works for you. And then join this team effort with your gift. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
2017 marks WPR's first 100 years of broadcasting. And even though some of your favorite shows weren't around in 1917, what if they were?
You may have noticed those Liberty Bond posters at the dry goods store. This week during On Your Money, Kevin McKinley weighs in on whether they're right for you. That's coming up tomorrow at 0800.
Okay, so maybe the Joy Cardine Show wasn't around to cover 1917, but we've been through a lot in our first 100 years, and it's all thanks to listeners like you. Here's to the next century of broadcasting. Help build our future now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Make your donation in support of the programs you count on. Go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552. Jill Nadeau is joining me. I'm Larry Mueller, here to raise the money that keeps Wisconsin Public Radio and this program on the air. So maybe your pledge is $10 a month. Maybe it's $100 a month. We appreciate and we count on your gift.
And maybe you've already made a donation this year or you're a sustaining member. Thank you so much. We're glad. We'll gladly accept your extra gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. You'll help make this drive successful and you'll support the programs you enjoy every day, like the Larry Mueller Show.
And I've already given once, and as I said, I won't during the show, and I don't have time to run back and give more. So you got to help me out here. We are looking for 13 more contributors here, and you know, I tell you what, it's a tuition-free lifelong education. As far people say, gosh, you know a lot. Well, I know a little about a lot of things. But I tell you what, I've learned an awful lot here on Wisconsin Public Radio, and maybe you have as well. And it's their support that makes a difference, isn't it, Jill?
Absolutely. And you know, a gift to Wisconsin Public Radio is like a gift to your entire community. You enjoy the radio station, and so do many others.
So this is the time. If you think you've been thinking about it, well, should I give now? I think it'd be a good idea to give during the Larry Mueller Show. That's my opinion right now.
It's
unbiased.
Opinion.
It is. There's no bias at all.
There's no bias at all, Larry.
All you have to do is go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552. We'll be back with Kathleen Ernst and talk some more with her about her latest book right after this look at the news. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, talking with Wisconsin author Kathleen Ernst. She is the creator of the Chloe Ellefson mystery series, talking with her about her newest book in the series. It's called Mining for Justice, set in Mineral Point, and explores the history of lead mining in Wisconsin. And, of course, there's always somebody dead. This case has always been dead a long, long time, and the mystery of how or why that person died, it gets kind of revealed near the end. And of course, I'm not going to tell, because Jill's saying, don't say anything, don't say anything. Of course, I wouldn't let the cat out of the bag. You may have questions for her. Maybe you've read her series. Maybe you have some questions about mining, or maybe about Chloe Ellefson or the books. Maybe you want to know where she's going to be appearing. We'll certainly talk about that. Number to call, 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. And Kathleen, Peter from La Crosse emailed a really nice note and saying, thank you, Larry, for such a great show. And thank you, Kathleen, for a wonderful series. I'm curious, Kathleen, do you write the side story, which is the sort of the history story, before the Chloe story or during the story? It seems that drifting in and out of the past drives some of the storylines of Chloe's mystery rather than the other way around.
That's a great question, and thank you so much, Peter, for your kind comments. Getting the balance right between the two storylines, Chloe's storyline and the historic storyline, is actually the trickiest part of putting the book together. I do try to write the book as you would read it. So I do go back and forth as I write, but I usually do have to tinker a little bit with what goes where in the end, because my goal is that for you, the reader, you are gaining information in a seamless way as you go back and forth reading the past chapters and the more contemporary chapters. So you will end up with more information than Chloe ever has. But getting that just right so that it flows smoothly is probably the hardest part of writing these books.
Yeah. And, you know, he says, oh, thank you. I love the series. My daughter and I take our own Chloe tours of Old World as we follow your series.
Oh, nothing makes me happier than hearing things like that. One of my primary goals when I began the series was really to celebrate Wisconsin's historic places. So I love hearing that you're sharing that with your daughter. Thank you.
I think that's wonderful. And you have a very active social media presence.
I do. I love having that opportunity to interact with people who live perhaps too far away to come to a public event. So you can find me on Facebook, search for Kathleen Ernst, author. And I have a wonderful website that my husband has developed with lots of resources about the books, behind-the-scenes information. And you can find my website at KathleenErnst.com.
Yeah, and it's great. And you often involve your readers in events.
Oh, yes, that's great fun. The readers that I've met through this particular series are just the most wonderful people, and it's fun to get together with them when we can and interact that way.
And you know, I wanted to bring up another point, which is I was thinking about the different storylines that are going on in a typical one of your books, and this one has, I think, four storylines going at the same time. I mean, they all come together nicely, but you've got the two that we've spent a lot of time mm-hmm. talking about. But then there are two sort of separate storylines that involve Relke, who is Chloe's partner, I guess you could
gentleman friend.
Yeah, very big gentleman or strong gentleman friend. I'm not quite sure how to name him here, because they're not married, but they're living together.
They're living together, and they're going in that direction.
Yeah. I kind of figured that sooner or later there'd be another book that involves that. But so the other two threads that I see. One involves one involves drugs, mm-hmm. and the other involves kind of a bad relationship that Relke's relative.
Relke's cousin, Libby.
Libby had with her now ex-husband.
Now ex. Yeah, this is a full book, and another challenge of writing a book like this is getting everything to come together at the end, and I think that actually worked out quite nicely in this book. So Relke McKenna is a police officer, and he very much wants to be a very good police officer, but when his family is threatened, he really struggles with how to handle that. He wants to let the local police take care of his cousin with her ex-husband stalking her and the children. But as time goes by, he gets more and more frustrated when the stalker is clever enough to avoid being caught. And really, when I think about it, when I conceptualize a mystery like this with so many different things going on, I look for a unifying theme. And in this case, the theme really asks the question, how far would you go to protect someone that you love, especially a child, if a child is involved? And Relke faces that question at a point in the story. Chloe faces that question.
Yeah.
Her friend who works at Pendarvis faces that question in regards to her daughter. And Mary Pascoe faces that question in the 1830s timeline. So that's the universal that I hope brings everything together.
And you brought, going back to Mary for a minute, you brought a little piece of, what is it? I'm forgetting the name of it now. It's a metal, or a, what is it?
It's iron, and it's called
iron.
Sticking Tommy, and this is one of the artifacts that is featured in the books. I really love to include artifacts when I can and help them drive the story. And this is the kind of tool that miners would have used in the 1830s. There's a socket for a candle, and then one end is a sharp spike. And if they had a timber in the mine, they could drive that into the timber, and that would provide the light for their working underground. And then there's also a hook, and the hook could also be balanced in a little cleft in the rock or something like that. And I think it's just a really visceral reminder of how difficult this work was. These Cornishmen went very deep and had very dark and dangerous conditions to work in.
Yeah, there were cave-ins. You wonder how they did it without the kind of equipment that does exist today. Oh my goodness!
It was brutal work. They were quite proud of their skills, but I know in Cornwall the average life expectancy of a man who mined his whole life was not very good.
Yeah, not very good at all. Mm-hmm. And there's another element that comes in that was I'd kind of forgotten about. It was nice to be reminded about. There's a young slave, a young boy, mm-hmm. and did that actually, another adult brings this kid to actually work in a mine, and the adult doesn't work in the mine, he just has the slave.
Right. It did happen, yes, it absolutely happened. It probably wasn't common, but we do know that there were black people working at the mines, some who were not enslaved and some who were, and I thought that was an interesting thing to bring out because so many of the prominent men, I shouldn't say so many, but some of the prominent men from that period that we remember as leaders, and they have schools and parks named after them, were often very tough men of their times. And that might mean owning slaves. That might mean pursuing Indian wars with a viciousness that would make us cringe today, and that's just part of the time.
Yeah, just a really, really tough part of the time. Well, Pendarvis House, too, and Pendarvis, I think there may have been some financial problems with it over time, and that's kind of another thing that's going on in the book.
It is. When I arrived in Wisconsin and went to work for the Historical Society, this was the big issue of the day. In 1981, all of the historic sites in the governor's budget were funded, and then there was a major funding cut that in part of the legislative process that threatened to close Pendarvis and I believe also Stonefield Village. And so that was a very difficult time. And
yeah.
Some of the blame went to larger sites like Old World, Wisconsin, that some people thought had taken too many resources. There's no easy answer for something like that because obviously I passionately believe that all of the sites deserve full funding, whatever that might mean. But for Chloe, as an employee of Old World Wisconsin, to arrive in Mineral Point in Pendarvis right when this news is coming out, that complicated her stay there right from the beginning.
It certainly did. You have some, before I forget about it, you have some appearances coming up, and we'll go to the phones in a minute here, but you have some appearances coming up that you wanted to talk about.
I do. I'm very excited about two events this weekend. Tonight is the official launch party for Mining for Justice at Mystery to Me, which is a fabulous independent bookstore in Madison. And we're starting at 6 p.m., a little earlier, so Packer fans can get home for the game. And then this weekend, Mineral Point is celebrating their annual Cornish Fest, and I am thrilled to be very involved in that this year. Oh. We're going to be launching the book. What better place to launch the book than at Mineral Point in Pendarvis for Cornish Fest? So I'm going to be doing programs and signing books both on Saturday and Sunday, and we have lots of other appearances scheduled for the fall, and listeners can find everything, all the details, again, on my website, which is KathleenErnst.com.
And that Cornish Fest, do you know a little more about Cornish Fest? What happens? I mean, there may be people who want to, you know, say, hey, you know what? I can see Kathleen and I can attend this event.
Oh, yes. It's a wonderful celebration of the town's ethnic heritage, really. And there will be programs. There's some special activities offered at Pendarvis. I'm giving one talk and then the next day an illustrated program at Pendarvis. There's going to be a pasty supper at the Walker House, 1836, amazing building. And so you can come and enjoy the culture, the food, the music, the entertainment. It's a little bit of everything.
And again, the dates for that are?
That is this weekend.
Yeah, this coming weekend.
This coming weekend, Saturday and Sunday.
So if you're looking for something to do, you may have found it. Let's go to Rod in Madison. Hi, Rod.
Hi. Say, I'm not a really big reader, but I've been listening to WPR for a long time while I'm driving on the road, and I got into the Chloe Ellison books through the Memory of Muskets.
Oh, yes.
That was just on, and I got really involved with that. I even had to tell my wife about it. But I was wondering, are your books available on tape or disc where I can listen to them while I'm on the road?
Oh, thank you, Rod. What a great question. Right now, only the first three books are available, so you should be able to find those at your library easily. And I'm very hopeful that the rest of the series gets picked up by the audio publisher as well. And I just want to mention, too, it was quite a thrill for me to hear my book read on Chapter a Day with Jim Fleming here from Wisconsin Public Radio.
He's a great reader.
He's a fabulous reader.
I really enjoyed it. And like I said, unfortunately, I'm not a big reader, never have been. But I found it so interesting and so pleasurable to drive and be able to listen to something every day for a half hour other than music, because music isn't always what you want.
Oh, I'm so glad.
Thank you very much, Rod, for calling. And there was one other question about the appropriateness. Someone else wondered about what age range would you say of, you know, how young can you go? Let's put it that way. You can go as old as you want, but how about the other end?
I would say teens, probably. These are traditional mysteries. There is not ever excessive gore or vicious behavior or violence. There's a little bit of language. So parents ask me that all the time. And if you have any question, I would just suggest to a parent that you screen the book first, and then you can decide for your kids. But I've written for children too, and I have lots of readers who just graduated from my children's books into this series. And I would say lots of readers from maybe 12, 13, 14,
yeah,
on up.
I've got a 14-year-old daughter, and she likes mysteries, and so she's going to be, I'll be handing over Mining for Justice to her.
Oh, terrific.
To read. Kathleen, it's always a pleasure.
It's a great pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Kathleen Ernst, award-winning author, educator, and social historian. I think her books have sold about all of her books together have sold about 1.5 million copies. So she's done pretty well, and this whole Chloe Ellison series is absolutely fun to read and very enjoyable, and you'll learn quite a bit along the way, which is another good thing about it, isn't it, Jill Nadeau?
Absolutely.
Jill's here to help tell you that we need your support right now. Your gift, any amount during our fall membership drives, makes such a difference. Please go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552 and make your contribution.
Well, I've got an update from last hour. We did hear from 25 members.
Pretty good.
Thank you so much to everyone that pledged. Now, our goal this time is for 15 pledges by 12:30.
We're celebrating our first 100 years, and it's a great time to support the station you love. Help us meet our goal and start the next 100 years out strong with your centennial gift at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And we've been enjoying this wonderful conversation with Kathleen about her new book. And as some of our callers just said, he got introduced to this by listening to WPR. And how wonderful is that? It's just an example of what the interesting, fun, and cool things that we talk about on the show.
So I hope you'll take a few minutes right now to make this hour and many more hours possible. Choose a gift amount that works for you, and then go ahead and make your pledge at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And when you become a sustainer, you choose a monthly gift amount, and you set it up to come out of your bank account or your credit card, and it will continue for as long as you want it to.
I'm kind of a sustainer. I pledge every time, but
you do it when it's important,
right? I give it a lump sum, and I wanted one of those hats.
It's not a beanie.
We call them toques.
Yeah, we call them toque.
We call them toques. They're a knit cap.
That's another, with
the Wisconsin Public Radio logo on it, and they're really cool. And so, you know, you can get one of those hats with a contribution. I don't know what the contribution.
I think it's a $10 contribution.
$10 a month. Yeah, I went higher than that on mine. But you can go $10 a month if you want one of those hats.
Absolutely.
Or you can go $20, or I even went a little higher than that on mine, $20 a month, at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And you know what? You turn on the radio every day without any charge at all, and you enjoy hours of either music or news or great conversations, entertainment. And for some people, well, that's where the relationship ends.
Yeah, but for a special group of people, the relationship changes over time. They become attached, then they give financial support. They willingly pay for something that others get for free.
That's right. Those are very special people, and we call them members. And we'd love to welcome you as a member today. Become our newest member right now with your first ever gift of $10 or $20 a month. Go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
Hey, Wisconsin, this is Ari Shapiro from NPR's All Things Considered. 2017 is a big year for Wisconsin Public Radio, your centennial, and I am so excited to celebrate it with you. I'm headed to Madison to host a special event called The Power of Story. It's October 14th at the Overture Center. We'll have stories, conversation, and music, and I will be joined by special guests, including Brian Reed, who created S-Town, storyteller Dasha Kelly Hamilton, WPR's own Anne Strainchamps, Dr. Jonathan Overby, and others. And here's a special opportunity that is only available during this pledge drive. Make a gift of any amount, and you'll be entered to win two VIP tickets to the show, dinner, a meet-and-greet reception, and accommodations in Madison. Sustainers, WPR has you covered. You are automatically entered. Find all the details at WPR.org/drawing, including how to enter by sending in a postcard. Make a gift today and ensure the future of WPR. Good luck and congratulations on 100 years.
Just go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552 to make your pledge during our fall membership drive. Larry Mueller here with Jill Nadeau. And we're asking for your support of WPR. And your gift is 10 or 15 or 20 bucks a month. Whatever amount you choose, that's the right amount.
Help pay for the programs that you depend on. And we are looking for 11 more pledges in just the next few minutes, about 4 minutes, Larry.
Mm-hmm.
Make your donation now. Please support the programs that you enjoy at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We had a caller during Kathleen, when we were talking with Kathleen, who listens while driving. And a lot of people listen to WPR while driving. We hear from people who are glad to know the weather forecast around the state as they set out on maybe a long trip and we hear from people who are sorry to reach their destination because they were so engrossed in what they were listening to. And I've done that myself.
Me too. Oh my gosh. And people look at you like, why are you sitting in your car? If you've ever sat in your car to hear the end of something, you've experienced a driveway moment when your last, when was your last driveway moment? Chances are, was it long time ago? Probably, maybe right now. Maybe you're sitting in your car listening to this pledge drive.
it might be. Maybe.
Maybe.
Maybe there's, what is Mueller going to screw up somehow along the way? I'll tell you what, we work on the honor system around here. You don't have to pay for it, but when you do choose to support it, you make all the WPR programs you enjoy possible. How about becoming a member right now? How about a pledge right now? You know, the other day I was reading a note from someone who said they were riding with their kids in the car, and the kids said to mom, can we become members too?
Yes, I saw that note too. That is amazing. I love that. Okay, so if the kids know, come on, parents, you can do it too. Make your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. You'll be doing your part to make sure that the news and information you need is here every day.
Here we got 11 pledges to go in the next couple of minutes. That's pretty easy to do with your support. You make it all possible. Your gift ensures a bright future for the programs you rely on every day. So I hope you'll make your centennial gift right now at WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552.
And ask for that WPR, well, beanie, but we're calling it a toque. And for my friends in the UP, it's the chook. So now you know what it is. And you can get that for a gift of $10 a month. Pledge now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And if you're a sustainer, you can become, if you're not, you can become one right now. If you are, thanks a lot. It's really easy to set up a convenient ongoing monthly donations. You can take it from your bank account or your credit card. I hope you'll support Wisconsin Public Radio. Jill and I have to go away now, but there's still a minute or so for you to make your contribution and help us reach our goal. Just go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552. Thanks if you've already contributed. If you haven't, I'm telling you, do it right now.
Please.